Welcome to Torah Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we are studying Yechezkel, Perek Mem Zayin, Chapter 47. In this last section of the Sefer, Yechezkel describes life in the times of the third Beis HaMikdash. This second-to-last Perek of the Sefer is a unique time in history. The Beis HaMikdash stands, the Shechina is within it, the Mizbeach and the Mikdash have been consecrated. The sins of the past have been atoned. The Nasi and the nation offer karbanos and serve Hashem. What more is left to make the world more perfect? What is the next step in this expansion of goodness that we have learned about? In this parak, we will learn that Yechezkel now sees that the Beis HaMikdash heals the world and provides it with abundance, both materially and spiritually. We will learn about a small trickle of water that starts in the Kodesh Kodashim, passes over the threshold of the Heichal, and winds its way past the Mizbeach to the east. From there, it flows out of the Beis HaMikdash, getting deeper and stronger as it flows the farther it goes from the Beis HaMikdash. This water heals the barren lands and the polluted oceans. People who bathe in it will be cured from all manner of illness. This water is a promise for physical prosperity, but it is also an allegory for the world's spiritual future. Water represents Nevuah and Kedusha. All the spiritual gifts that the Beis HaMikdash holds won't be limited to within its walls, but will flow outward, transforming the world. In Yeshaya it says, "Ushaftim mayim b'sasso mimayne ha-Yeshua." In the time of Geula, you will draw waters joyously from the wells of salvation. The Yerushalmi teaches that this pasuk is referring to the fact that man will access Ruach HaKodesh in the future and will be connected to Hashem. The waters that flow out from the Beis HaMikdash also mean that the Spirit of Hashem leaving the Kodesh Kodashim will change the world. Water has always had a place in the service of Hashem. In fact, the stream flowing from the Beis HaMikdash has its roots in the celebration of the water libations on Sukkot, in which we devoted our energies to doing our best to serve Hashem with the limited tools we have. The Gemara in Midos says, "Uvo hamayim fachakim v'asidim liosu tzin mitachas mifnah habayis." The water that trickled through the gates during the Simchas Beis HaShoeva during the days of the second Beis HaMikdash will one day gush forth from beneath the threshold of the Heichal. Every year, on Sukkot, there was a ceremony called Nisach HaMayim, the pouring of the water. A small jug of water was drawn from the Shiloach, carried up the road, and then brought through the most eastern gate of the southern wall, which is called the Water Gate. During the year, there would be a wine libation offered with each sacrifice. On Sukkot, each morning, they would use water together with the wine. Afterward, at night, there would be a celebration called the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, a celebration at the home where the water is drawn. The greatest rabbis would dance. It was said about Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, as an example, that he juggled 8 fiery torches and there would be tens of thousands of onlookers. Chazal say that someone who has not witnessed the Simchas Beis HaShoeva in the Beis HaMikdash has never seen joy in their lives. Why was there the Nisach HaMayim ceremony, and why was it accompanied by such ecstatic celebration, and why in the future will there be water that originates in the Beis HaMikdash? Rav Eisman quotes Rabbeinu Bachayit to explain this. During creation, the lower waters, the waters of this world, were split from the upper waters, the waters in heaven. Because of this division, imperfection became a part of life in the lower world. From that moment on, there was always some waste in everything physical. The lower waters complained about their imperfection to Hashem, and so they were given Nisach HaMayim. On Sukkot, the water of this world can reach its ideal state when they are offered as part of the karbanos. Fittingly, the waters reach their potential only because of the work of man who brought the water to the Beis HaMikdash. The confidence Hashem shows in us to overcome our limitations prompted the celebrations. When the third Beis HaMikdash is built, there will be no more division between the upper and lower waters. The world will finally be able to be perfect. Water, which before had to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash to elevate it, will now find its source in the Beis HaMikdash. This water will spread the healing power of Hashem to the world so that the world can reach its ideal, not just on Sukkot, but on any day of the year. Let's examine the Pesukim to see how Yechezkel expresses these ideas. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Yechezkel is standing at the gate of the Beis HaMikdash, and he sees water coming out of the Heichal from the Kodesh Kodashim flowing to the east. V'amayim yardin mitachas mikasef habayit ha'yimimis. And the waters were descending under the right-hand wall of the house, south of the Mizbeach. Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Yechezkel is brought out to the outer courtyard in front of the east, and he sees, Mayim mefachakim, min hakasef hayeminis, water that trickled on the right side. The water was flowing out to the Temple Mount. In the Gemara Yuma 77b, it tells us that this initial stream was only the size of a locust beak in the Kodesh Kodashim. As it flowed, it got slightly thicker until at the gate of the courtyard it was the size of the opening of a small jug. The Malach goes to the east with the measuring line in his hand and measures a distance of 1,000 amos, which is a bit more than a quarter of a mile. At that distance, the water is up to Yecheskel's ankles. The Malach goes another 1,000 amos, where the water is up to Yecheskel's knees, another 1,000, and it is up to his thighs. From that point on, Yecheskel leaves the water, as one should not stand in waters that is taller than the waist as it leads to drowning. After another 1,000 amos, the water had become a river. In Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Yecheskel is returned to the bank of the river. The Malach asks, Hara'isa ben Adam, have you seen this, son of man? Have you paid attention, the Madak explains, to how the river got bigger and better? The water represents something more than just a stream. During the third Beis Hamikdash, this is what life will be like for the Jewish people. It will continue to improve, both spiritually and physically. The Pesukim continue, describing what the world looks like, bringing to mind images of Gan Eden. On the banks of the river, Yecheskel sees, Eitz Rav Meod Mizeh Umizeh, very many trees on one side and the other. Malch tells him that the water is flowing to the east, V'yardu el ha'araba, to the Kinneret, Uva'u ha'yama, it will come to the sea, meaning the Yam HaMalach, the Dead Sea, el ha'yama ha'mutza'im, to the sea that spreads out, to the Mediterranean, near Pu Hamayim. All these waters will be healed. All these waters before the Geula had problems. Either they have excess salt, so no fish can live there, as in the Dead Sea, or they are polluted and the ecosystems are damaged. In the time of Bayis Shlishi, the Kedusha and the water flowing from the Beis Hamikdash will make things right again. The Malbim says it is not only the water that is damaged. The people who are drinking this water are spiritually ill. Their spiritual reality matches the physical pollution. The water, the Nebuah from the Beis Hamikdash, will heal these problems as well. As the rivers fill the oceans, the ecosystems will become healthy again and the fish will return. There will be so many fish in the Dead Sea that Pasuk Yod, verse 10, Amdu alav davagim, ne'en gedi vad ein eglayim. Fishermen will stand by it from ein gedi to ein eglayim, spreading their nets and catching fish easily in a place where no life had thrived before. The changes will be done in the perfect measure. Too much salt kills the fish, but none at all leaves the world lacking. Hashem will leave over salt in small areas that the world will have everything it needs without harming anyone. The Pesukim continue, telling us how just as the field water leads to an abundance of fish, the trees will also produce more fruit than was thought possible. The trees will continually grow new fruit, and their leaves won't wilt and die. What causes this change? Pasuk Yabez, verse 12, tells us clearly, Ki meimav min ha-mikdash hima yotzin, v'haya pir yo l'machal v'aleha l'trufa. Because its waters are coming out from the Beis Hamikdash, the temple, and its fruit, then, will be for food, and its leaves could be used for medicinal purposes. The Malbim says that the trees represent so much more than things that grow. They symbolize all the life that is rooted in this world. The Torah compares man to the tree of the field. Like the trees described here, during the third Beis HaMikdash, people's bodies will be healthy. A tree with everlasting leaves means it has a constant source of nourishment. People will have a steady and comfortable income. The promise of wealth could be upsetting. In the past, and in our current reality, wealth easily leads to complacency, to greed, and to materialism. However, this only happens when the world is split between the heavens and the earth. When physicality is defined by imperfection, wealth leads to distance from Hashem. During the Bayis Shlishi, our wealth will come directly from Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, not through our efforts, so we won't be corrupted by it. Pasuk Yud Gimel, through the end of the parak, starts a new topic where the outer boundaries of Eretz Yisrael are defined. These psukim are difficult. Landmarkers are mentioned, and we don't have clear ideas as to where these cities were. In Bamidbar, Lamed Aleph, chapter 34, Moshe defined the borders of Israel. Rashi feels that Pesukim and Yecheskel parallel those boundaries. As Rav Hirsch says in Bamidbar, we cannot attempt to provide an accurate translation of these delineations for the boundaries in Holy Land. The place names mentioned in the text cannot be identified with geographical accuracy. Therefore, any attempt to identify these localities today could only be based on conjecture with very little factual support. Some Rishonim and Achronim tried to get a sense of boundaries and connect landmarks mentioned here with the cities from their time. The Kaftor of Farach is a Rishon who lived in the 1300s. He moved to Israel and based his opinion on the geography of the land and on local tradition. He feels that the northern border will be extended into northern Syria. Others put the northern border of Israel in the future near Beirut, and others put it in southern Turkey. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, tells us that the land will be divided the Shnei Asar Shifte Yisrael Yosef Chavalim. According to the 12 tribes of Israel, Yosef receiving two portions, one for Manasseh, one for Ephraim. This pasuk is a promise that the nation needed to hear at this time in Galus. The Malbim says that Hashem is promising that all the Shvatim, even the 10 tribes we haven't located yet, will be found and returned to Eretz Israel. There will be so many Jews that we will need larger borders to hold us all. The boundaries in the future will be very different than those in the past. In the time of Yehoshua, each Shevet got a special portion in a particular location in the land with 2.5 Shvatim on the other side of the Yarden. Here, Pasuk Yudalad, verse 14, "Nechaltem osa ish ke'echad," and each person, meaning each Shevet, will inherit the same as his brother. Each Shevet will get a similarly sized strip of land that will range from the western border of the Mediterranean to the eastern border and be 25,000 measures north to south. Pesukim Tesvav through Yud-Zayin, verses 15 through 17, describe the northern border. Lifas Tzafonah min Hayam HaGadol, on the northern side from the Mediterranean, and then it tells us it goes by the way of Cheslon approaching Zedad. Though these names have little meaning to us, they would have meant more to the people living at the time who knew the geography. The northern border runs from the Mediterranean and then through a road called Cheslon. Rashi assumes that this is near Hor HaHor, which is the northern border mentioned in the Torah. As we mentioned before, commentaries place this northern border from Syria through Turkey. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, summarizes the northern border. V'haya gvol min hayam, chatzar enon gvol damaseh. And the border runs from the Mediterranean to chatzar enon by the border of Damascus. The northern border continues west to chatzar enon, and it becomes wider in the north as Damascus is included. Pasuk Yud Ches talks about the eastern border, which starts mibein chavron, between Chavron and Damascus. The Jordan River is the eastern boundary, as the pasuk says, "Umibein haGilad, umibein Eretz Yisrael haYarden." The border between Gilad, which was settled by Manasseh to the east of the Jordan, and the land of Israel, is the border is the Jordan River. Pasuk Yud Ches talks about the southern border, which many Mefarshim assume extends into the Sinai Desert or even to the Nile. Pasuk Chav, verse 20, describes the western border, "Ufaas Yam haYam haGadol," and the west side shall be the Great Sea, and the boundary will go up to Levo Chama. Pasuk of Aleph, verse 21, introduces the final topic of the parak, that the land will be divided among the Shvatim. Once again here, they are called Shifte Yisrael. While each Shevet is represented, they form one nation, each contributing their strengths. The final parak of the Sefer will discuss these details in depth. Pasuk of Beis in Chaf Gimel, 22 and 23, discusses a question that I've thought about before, and you probably have as well. In the times of Yehoshua, the Gerim did not get an Achla, and during the time of Mashiach, there will be no Gerim. What will happen to the Gerim who have converted over the last 3,000 years? U'hagerim hagarim b'sochachem, to the strangers that live among you, who have converted at some point in history and are now part of the community, asher holidu banim b'sochachem, who have children among you, they are part of the fabric of Jewish life. They will have the same status to you like a Yisrael who is entirely descended from one of the Shvatim. When you will get a portion, they will get it with you among the Shvatim of Israel. If a ger isn't descended from a Shevet, where will that portion be? And it will be in the Shevet where the ger lives, there you will give his inheritance. Rashi says that the portion will be in whatever Shevet they were living in when they converted to Judaism. In this parak, we learned about a stream that became a river that will heal the whole world, spiritually and physically, from the land to the sea, from the fish to the trees and the people. Its source is with Hashem, so it can help the world achieve perfection. This healed world, with its repaired relationship between spirituality and physicality, is now ready to support the Jewish nation again. Each Shevet will get a strip of land. In the next parak, we will conclude this sefer by learning where each Shevet will live and about the holy city that is the goal for the Geula. Thank you for studying together. L'Iloi Nishmas Malka Esther Basvi Yosef.